May it please the court, Justice Jacobs, Justice Holland, Chief Justice Steele, Justice Berger, and Justice Ridgely. My name is Mike Hyden. I represent Aaron Kelly. This case involves a fight between two inmates at the Delaware Correctional Center. Aaron Kelly was serving a term for burglary, and David Vera was serving a life term for rape. There are two versions of what had happened. Briefly said, Aaron Kelly testified that David Vera was expressing interest in him that was of a sexual nature, and that he was not interested in Mr. Vera. Mr. Vera was coming on to him one afternoon. He was taking a shower, and Vera came and started to grope him and assault him in the shower, and he fought with Vera. And then Vera went to his cell. Kelly went to his cell. Vera came back with a deadly weapon, which was a lock and a sock, and assaulted Kelly with the lock and a sock, and Kelly beat him up.
According, was this treated as one fight or two fights or three fights? What was the charge for?
It was as one fight. The Vera, his testimony was that he was simply getting into the shower next to Kelly, and for no reason, totally unprovoked, Kelly attacked him and hit him. He denied coming on to Kelly or trying to assault him sexually, and that Kelly knocked him down. And then he testified that he went to his cell, and the rest of the story or the version was not really contested, that he put a lock in a sock and came after Kelly and attacked him, hit him with the lock in a sock, and Kelly beat him up again.
Now, so the so-called victim testified that the initial confrontation, in effect, had ended. He had gone back to his cell. He put a lock and a sock and then went to attack the defendant in the case.
Exactly.
That's undisputed.
Undisputed.
And it's the defendant who was hit with the lock and a sock who is, or the person who was hit with the lock and the sock after that so-called break in the action, if you'll excuse the expression, who became the defendant.
Correct. And the both men testified, and that part of it wasn't a dispute. Vera didn't deny. He clearly admitted that he was mad. He went back. He got he put the lock in the sock, and I think he said he would have killed him if he could have.
Well, was Vera ever charged with anything?
No.
Did your client, was he personally aware of the prior or the reason that Vera was serving a sentence?
Yes.
Did he testify to that, or was?
Well, that was the crux of the appeal. What had happened is that I wanted to bring to the attention of the jury that Mr. Vera was a convicted rapist.
Well, you wanted to do that with a cross-examination of Vera, right?
Correct.
But did your client testify to it when he was on the stand as to his knowledge?
No, and the judge said we couldn't get into it. I didn't think it would be appropriate to get into it after the judge made the ruling.
Well, let's go back to Justice Ridgely's question about the origin of the charge. You've characterized it as one fight, but it seems to have three parts. One is the initial scuffle fight in the shower. The second is after the lock is put in the sock. Then the third would be your client's response to getting hit with the lock in the sock or the attempt. But if we look at what your client was charged with, is he charged with starting the fight in the shower? Or is he charged with not retreating after he's hit with the lock in the sock? Or what exactly is the assault that led to the conviction?
Well, the indictment doesn't break it down like that. It just says on such and such a date, you know, the assault occurred. So I, the indictment doesn't say that. I think what the argument was is that the state made during the case was that the after the initial incident in the shower, he beat him up too much. After he hit him with a...
So if we look at it from that point of view, the shower's out of the equation, getting hit with the lock and the sock is out of the equation. Your client is charged with assault based exclusively on his response being too severe.
I think that's what their argument was. And the prosecutor argued that, especially as far as the second part of the fight was concerned, was that Kelly had knocked Vera down. And this is after Vera hit him with the lock and the sock and ended up hitting him on the shoulder when his back was turned. He turned around and he started hitting Vera, and he knocked him down. And then Vera tucked himself up on the ground, and Kelly continued to hit him and kick him. And I think the prosecutor's argument was, well, at that point, Kelly went too far. At that point, Kelly should have stopped doing what he did.
Was the jury instructed about the amount of force that could be used in self-defense?
I'm sure they were. I know it was an issue, and that's what we talked about, so I'm sure it was a jury instruction.
Well,
I'm having trouble following this. To the extent that your client clearly did beat up Vera, that's also undisputed, right?
Right.
Okay, so the issue is whether that was justified, whether it was self-defense, correct?
Exactly.
All right. And in that regard, I take it your position is it was important for the jury to know that your client knew Vera was a rapist and that from your client's perspective, Vera was going to attack him and try and rape him potentially, and that's what he was responding to. And that all of that evidence was excluded. Any information as to Vera's conviction as a rapist was excluded, both in terms of examination of Vera and also your client being able to testify about that's what was motivating his fear or whatever, right?
Right.
Okay. I'm with you so far in terms of following what your argument is. The problem I'm having is that if I understand correctly, the state's position is it doesn't matter whether he had the best reason in the world to be afraid of Vera. It passed the point at which you could justify what his conduct was because, by the time this altercation was cut off, the initial attacker, Vera, was curled up in a little ball and obviously was not an attacker anymore, and therefore your client should have backed off. So we don't care whether he was or was not a rapist. We don't care whether your client legitimately was concerned about being raped because the response was beyond what is permissible. Is that basically the way it played out?
Not quite. The prosecutor's argument and the judge's ruling was that I could talk about Vera being convicted of a felony. However, we couldn't raise the fact that the felony was rape.
I understand.
And the judge and the prosecutor argued, and the judge agreed, that the nature of that crime was so extreme that the prejudice outweighed the probative value.
I understand, but what I was trying to determine it to see whether you agree with this is that if I understand it correctly, none of that made any difference in the end because even if your client had a justification at the outset, with respect to being concerned that he was about to be raped, he went beyond what the law would allow in terms of his responsive use of force.
Well, I think it's the question of whether he has justification and his response is looking or is examined in light of his subjective belief about how much danger he was in. And the jury should have known that he thought that he was being attacked by a convicted rapist. If he was being attacked by, say, a convicted tax cheat, it may be a different story.
But regardless of what his subjective beliefs were, isn't there a limit as to how far you're allowed to go in self-defense?
Sure. Sure. But that's all the limit and the amount of self-defense and your response, I think, is examined and considered in light of what the other person is doing. For instance,
that's why I asked you about the series of events. You seem to be suggesting if a tax cheat hits you with a lock and a sock, there's one level of response, but that if a rapist hits you with a lock and a sock, you're entitled to have a higher level of response. And that jury should have known that the escalation in the response was because of the nature of this person that had hit him with the lock and the sock. Is that correct?
Well, I don't think it's a question of you necessarily become justified, but I think it's something that the jury should be able to consider, or it shouldn't be hidden from them, the nature of that person's crime. If you're being attacked by a tax cheat, by a lock and a sock, you may react in a certain way. If you're being attacked by someone who is a rapist, a convicted rapist, and a sexual predator, you're probably going to be a lot more alarmed, and I would think that the person being attacked would have a higher state of anxiety and fear and would react in a more severe manner.
What my problem is this. I think Justice Berger's question gets to the crux of the case, but as I read the transcript and the briefs, I'm not convinced that the trial judge, when the trial judge ruled on whether or not you could question either Vera or Viru, whatever the name is, because your briefs are inconsistent in the name of the supposed victim, whether or not you could question the victim or whether or not you could introduce otherwise through your own client his subjective belief that he'd been attacked by a rapist. What I'm concerned about is the trial judge seemed to rule that you can't do that for two reasons. One, because the rape was of a woman, therefore it would have no significance to the defendant in determining that he believed he was justified in retaliating in the way in which he did, either for the momentary attack or to forestall any future advances that he found offensive. I think maybe that's not clear as it should be, but I get that impression from the way the trial judge ruled that there's some magic there in a rape of a woman and a sexual assault of a male in an all-male prison. The second thing he appeared to rely on was the fact that the rape occurred 17 years ago, and therefore it was too remote in time to have any significance to the subjective state of mind of someone who's been assaulted in the shower at the all-male prison 17 years later. Now, I don't think the trial judge's ruling suggests he focused at all where Justice Berger's question focuses, which is the heart of the matter. Even if he was justified in fending off the shower attack, even if he was justified because he'd just been hit in the shoulder only because the person who hit him couldn't hit him in the back of the head, though that's where he intended to hit him, with a lock and a sock, to say that he's not justified to retaliate is absurd. But the question here really is the extent to which he responded. And I don't get that the trial judge ever focused on that in his ruling. So what difference does the ruling on rape really mean?
Your Honor's correct in how you just analyzed the judge's ruling. The judge said, and the state argued, and the judge agreed, that it wasn't a similar crime. because in the initial rape for which he was convicted, the victim in that case was a woman. It was a handicapped woman in a wheelchair. In this case, the victim, the intended victim, Aaron Kelly, was a man. And the judge said, different type of crime, and dismissed it. As far as the time period that's concerned, it is a long period of time that expired between the conviction and this trial. As I recall, 609 looks at the date of the conviction or the release from prison for that conviction as to whether it gets in. But nonetheless, I think the judge properly looked at and considered the delay between the conviction and this trial date. But again, we get to the issue is my client, Mr. Kelly's subjective state of mind when he was being confronted and attacked by Mr. Vera. And he thought Mr. Vera was a convicted rapist, which is a violent crime. It's one of the worst crimes that we have on our books. And that's what he was looking at. That's what he considered the person who was coming after him, the guy who assaulted him in the shower. And it was a type of crime that was sexual in nature. It was a sexual assault. And it didn't matter whether this was an opposite sex crime or a same sex crime. It was a sexual assault. And he looked at himself being a victim of a sexual assault. And Mr. Vera was a guy who had set this up. I mean, he had made overtures towards Mr. Kelly, which Mr. Kelly rejected. And he told him in no uncertain terms that he was not interested in him. Nonetheless, Mr. Vera continued and attacked him in the shower. So there's two things that we look at. Number one, we look at how does this play as far as Mr. Vera is concerned. When you look at his character, should the jury have known that he was a convicted felon, of course. Should they have known that he was a rapist? Well, that's the balancing that the judge does.
In terms of what the state actually argued, though, did they argue beyond the assault while the victim, alleged victim, was on the floor trying to cover himself in a ball? I mean, is that what the focus was? Convict this defendant because he was beating somebody up who was on the ground in a ball.
I think that's what their argument was.
And was that clear throughout the entire case?
It was. They argued also that the first incident at the shower was totally unprovoked. They argued for no reason Kelly assaulted this guy and started punching this guy unprovoked in the shower. But I think really the argument that they really wanted to focus on and that they stressed to the jury was that after the incident in the cell, after Kelly had knocked Vera down after he had been hit with the lock in the sock, Vera went down and crouched in a ball, and Kelly kept on hitting him.
Is there any instruction from the judge to help the jury sort out that it's that incident with the Vera on the floor that was the basis of the charge as opposed to the incident in the shower?
No, I think they just treated it as one continuous incident.
So if I understand it right, the import of the fact that Vera had been convicted of rape and the need for the jury to know it all went to the credibility of the self-defense argument. Is that correct? That is, it was designed to make it more believable to the jury.
No, there's two things. Number one, is to weaken the strength of Vera's testimony. Okay. Weaken the strength because he's a convicted felon. Weaken the strength because it shows that his previous crime was similar to the way that I was arguing that he was acting in the prison that day. So one is to focus on him, focus on what he did in the past, focus on his credibility. The second part of the argument was to focus on the subjective state of mind of Mr. Kelly.
Right, and what difference does his subjective state of mind make unless it's to make more believable to the jury that even though he was beating up this guy who was curled up in a ball and was not threatening him, that he at least subjectively felt that he had a real need to defend himself.
That's the argument, that he felt he had a real need, and I think that's what 11 Delaware Code Section 464 talks about.
So it was designed to enhance the credibility of his self-defense argument.
Exactly.
You mentioned that the other purpose of the rape conviction and arguing it before the jury was to reduce the credibility or undermine the credibility of Veru. In what respect? Was there any dispute that Veru was curled up in the ball and that Kelly was beating on him? I mean, if that was not disputed, then how does the fact that Veru had been convicted of rape 17 years before matter at all?
Well, because what happened before he curled up? I mean, there was he grabbed Mr. Kelly in the shower in his private parts, so wouldn't let go, and Kelly had to hit him before he would. Then he comes after Kelly.
Well, is that disputed?
Vera said he didn't do anything. Okay, so that is disputed. Then you have the second event where Vera attacks him with a lock in his sock, and Kelly knocks him down. And there's more than one punch, and he has to hit him a number of times before he gets him down. And according to Kelly, as the correction officers were coming to the scene, Vera curled up in a ball, and according to Kelly during his testimony, he thought that Vera did this in order to get sympathy from the correction officers.
Now, the state has argued that this is harmless. Any error was harmless. Why isn't it harmless?
Well, because it goes to the state of mind of Kelly. It goes to his defense of justification, and for the jury to consider how far and how much and what was appropriate in his response to Vera's actions.
Well, but in the record, you were able to present evidence of these prior overtures and this soap carving and things like that. So at least the jury was aware of the fact that from Kelly's point of view, whether Vera was a convicted rapist or not, that might have been Vera's intent in the shower.
From Kelly's point of view, yes.
You got that in front of the jury, that yeah. Kelly was concerned that Vera was going to act upon these overtures that had been rejected.
Yes. And I guess the question would be, in his mind, when he said no, was Vera going to respond in a violent manner and force himself upon Kelly like he forced himself upon that handicapped woman?
You also had the opportunity to argue that the defendant had just been attacked by a guy with a lock and a sock who claimed that he was trying to cave his head in. He simply missed and hit him in the shoulder. And that you could argue that how strong a reaction could one reasonably expect under those circumstances. And you also had the opportunity to argue that Vera or Veru, whatever his name is, curled up in a ball for effect in front of the only witnesses to any of the series of incidents, which was the very end of the three-prong fight or three-part fight. So what's missing from what you put to the jury? Certainly there's somebody on the jury that infers that the beating went on while he was on the floor for another few seconds in order to send the message to this guy that if what Kelly said was true, leave me alone for the rest of the time we're in this place together. Somebody on the jury had to get that message, don't you think?
You would think so, and I would think that if they thought or understood how dangerous the man that Mr. Kelly was dealing with, then I think they would have understood Kelly's reaction.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court, Elizabeth McFarland on behalf of the state.
Could I start out where I kind of left off, at least in my mind? Did the state approach this trial from the perspective that most of what happened is undisputed and the only issue before the jury is the extent to which the defendant retaliated after being attacked and that he went overboard?
Yes. That's precisely what happened. Mr. Vera was substantially smaller in stature and size than Mr. Kelly. He was severely beaten, had many, many injuries, a lot of which did not, in fact, get in front of the jury because there of lack of a doctor. But in any case, that was the main focus of the prosecution, was that whatever had transpired at the showers, later on, what happened, Veru said, I went at him with a lock and a sock, certainly potentially a lethal weapon. And but for my injuries, I would have killed him. And then Kelly retaliated. The problem became he continued and beat and beat and beat this man who was lying on the ground, and that was the reason for the charge.
The evidence is I was trying to kill Kelly, and he overreacted.
Yes. Reason. Yes. That is basically, Vera said, I was injured from the earlier fight outside the showers. It wasn't in the showers, apparently. It was outside of the showers. They never got into the showers. And because I was injured there, Vera said he went back to his cell to get a weapon to retaliate for that fight.
Well, if he was trying to kill Kelly, admittedly, why wasn't he charged with anything?
Kelly had only a swollen knuckles, and Veru had extensive injuries.
If someone fired a gun at someone and missed, you would probably prosecute the person that shot the gun.
Well, to my knowledge, Veru had never said he intended, until he got on the stand, to kill, that he would have killed.
So after he gave that sworn testimony, he still wasn't charged.
No.
Well, let's hope that that's because the AG's office was focused on economic efficiency and realized that he was already serving a life term for the rape. The only justification for not charging him, right?
I do not know what went into that process, Your Honor. I do know that, first, he was in there for 30 years. Second of all, that the guards testified that the guards' testimony was very clear that Vera was not an aggressive person. They had never had any problems with him. And the credibility was certainly in doubt that he had ever tried to sexually molest anyone and that he was, in fact, the original victim of the first assault in front of the shower. And that was...
Who testified to that?
That... testified.
He was the original victim.
Oh, no, Veru testified to that. The guards testified to his history of not having disciplinary problems.
Okay, well, it was somewhat unclear from your brief, but as I sorted through it, I got the impression that the only, we'll call them, for lack of a better term, objective eyewitnesses were correction guards and an inmate who gave a statement but didn't want to testify, that they had seen the very end of the fight, but nobody had seen anything. Nobody had seen the shower incident. Nobody had seen the lock and the sock swung. Is that correct?
The defense put on some inmates who testified that they had seen, one said he saw the lock, I believe it was Kelly's cellmate testified that he had seen the lock and the sock go sliding across the floor. Another one testified that he thought Kelly had been hit with, or it may have been the same. There was some testimony that Kelly may have been hit with a lock in the sock, that it bounced off of him. The only witness, the fight in front of the showers was not witnessed by anyone other than one inmate who said he was inside the shower, which made no sense because they weren't hadn't been opened yet. So that certainly wasn't credible at that point.
How do we know that the jury didn't convict on the basis of the fight in the shower?
The convict on the based on the first part? We don't know what the jury convicted on, other than the closing arguments by the state emphasized the fact that the crime was that it went too far, and that was the state's emphasis both in its closing and in its rebuttal on A59 and A61 of the appendix, where the state argued that this was too much, it went too far.
Well, in light of your earlier comment about how Mr. Vero is a smaller man and that the state's witnesses, the guards, explained that Mr. Vero was not a disciplinary problem and never attacked anyone and so forth, that would suggest, I would think, to the jury that Kelly actually was the aggressor from the get-go and there was really no basis for any self-defense claim. In light of that testimony from the state's side, wouldn't it make it more critical for the jury to understand that Viru may look like a pretty mild-mannered guy, but in fact he's in prison for rape and rape of an invalid? In terms of establishing that looks can be deceptive?
Well, I think that Vero, by his own testimony, put it out there that looks could be deceptive. He was the one who testified he attacked.
But we're talking about another point, which is that Vero was a convicted rapist.
Yes. The defendant got in front of the jury that he believed that Vera was homosexual, that he had been making overtures, that he believed he was trying to molest him. He got all of that in front of the jury. The fact that Vera, you know, 19 years before that, had raped a woman, a handicapped woman, in a very different type of circumstances, was not very probative of a homosexual predatory behavior that might go on in prison regardless of your prior conviction.
It's intended to be probative of the state of mind of the defendant, isn't it? I mean, it's what it meant to him as opposed to what it may mean to an objective or other person, isn't it?
It was unclear what there were various reasons listed for why he wanted that information in, but that would be one of them. And he did make it clear from the defense case that was what, and he testified that he believed this man was going to come after him in a sexual way. And
the issue is whether, beyond testimony, that the jury should question Vera or Veru. I still can't get clear on what his last name is, not that it's, I guess, significant. Not so much that he was or hadn't been convicted of a felony related to his credibility, but whether in the mind of the defendant the fact that the exact felony that he was convicted for was one that involved a sexual assault on a helpless person. Why wouldn't that be relevant to Kelly's state of mind about the extent to which he needed to keep this person away from him?
Well, it's like Getz. It's not someone's sexual proclivity is not out there for
I'm not talking about sexual proclivity. We're talking here about that element of justification, which, for better or worse, Delaware says, is examined based on the mind of the individual, not on the basis of a reasonably objective person in the same situation, but what was subjectively in that person's mind at the time. Whether it demonstrates sexual proclivity or not, and that's a huge stretch under Getz. Is it otherwise admissible because it speaks directly to the highly relevant issue of what was in Kelly's mind when he retaliated the way he did to being attacked with a lock and a sock by a person who said he was trying to cave his head in killing? One of the ironies of this case, at least in my mind, is the crux of the matter is on whether Kelly overreacted by kicking a guy who fell to the ground to make an alleged impression on the correction guards and kicked him too often and hurt him too badly, as opposed to whether Veru or Vera overreacted to being struck outside the shower by rushing back to his cell, putting a lock and a sock, and trying to kill somebody. Is that irony lost on anyone but me?
I think it was the huge disparity between the strength and the credibility of them that was the motivation behind the charging decisions.
Seinfeld's bizarro world to me. If somebody tries to kill someone, they get beat up, and they're the innocent victim. I'm having trouble with this.
Well,
how do we come to this result?
Because originally, Kelly did not tell anyone about the assault at the showers. Veru was the one who informed people, "I was assaulted at the showers," and then went on. Kelly didn't say anything about an assault at the showers. He said nothing about that. That's how these things happen. If he had believed that he had been assaulted earlier, perhaps he should have said something. He didn't.
Well, he might have thought when he said, "The guy tried to kill me with a lock and a sock, and I reacted in a way I thought was appropriate," that maybe what happened in the shower wasn't as significant as trying to be killed.
He basically did not make a statement originally. So that.
Well, is it relevant that if Vera had not succeeded in killing Kelly, Kelly might have been disabled? And then he would have been similarly situated to Vera's victim for the crime that he was convicted.
Well, he would still have been a man as opposed to a woman, but I mean, if the implication is he would have then been handicapped, and then because he was handicapped would have been assaulted,
really goes to the exclusion of the evidence because there's prejudice. We have two convicts convicted of felonies, and we have someone trying to kill someone with a lock and a sock. But the argument is, well, if they knew that the attacker was a convicted rapist, that would just be too much. It's okay to know that he was trying to murder the victim, but we don't want the jury to know that he was a convicted rapist because that would be too prejudicial. I don't see how the balancing works there.
Well, the state's not entirely sure at this point how the balancing all came out there either. But the bottom line is that the assault went too far. The lock and the sock either bounced off of him or didn't hit Kelly at all, and his reaction was to pummel the man to near death. That's the ultimate end, and that's what the conviction was for.
Yeah, we've gone from kicked him while he was on the ground to serious injuries to near death. What does the record support in the absence of medical testimony for your statement that while he was on the ground, Kelly kicked him until near death?
If he hadn't been stopped, he was violently kicking him about the head and the body and had
now,
hit
is that
him.
Just simply your characterization, or do you have record support for near death?
I have vicious attack. I don't have near death. That's my
but
description.
You just told us it went to near death. He kicked him to near death.
It is my opinion that if you keep kicking someone who is lying on the ground in the head, that it's...
And that goes to how you kick him, where you kick him, and how long you kick him. And without record support, how do you make that statement to this court?
I have record support that he was kicked 12 times or more.
Setting aside the issue of excessive force at the end of this episode, is the rape conviction otherwise relevant to prove the state of mind of the defendant in responding?
It is debatable that the rape of a handicapped woman is probative or is relevant to his state of mind that he believed he was going to be homosexually attacked.
Well, what if he says it's relevant? I was fearful because I knew he was a rapist. Is
then
it relevant then?
Yes, in terms of a justification, yes, it would be.
But he wasn't allowed to be asked that question, was he?
No, that's correct. In the end, the state contends that was harmless because of the events that took place in the facts of this case.
That's an important distinction, because if we agree with your last statement, the rule of law that would come out of this is that under similar circumstances, the rape conviction should have been made known to the jury. But in this context, it's a harmless error. So is that the state's position, that with retrospect, the rape conviction should have been made known to the jury, and even though it was not in this case, it's still a harmless error?
Well, in this, well, the state's position would be that in looking, it's unclear from the record because the first part was not transcribed, apparently it's not, under what theory the admission was requested for that. If it was 609, then that should be, there's a balancing test that's required to be made, and whether it was an abuse of discretion or not, the judge believed that the rape of a woman was not probative in this case. And it was correct to do that analysis. In terms of, it was whether it should have come in under another theory, it's unclear whether the judge was given the opportunity to rule on 404B, this, that, and the other because of the...
My question was prompted by Justice Ridgely's question. I understood his question to be based on justification and the statute and the defendant's state of mind. I understood your answer to the question to be yes, it would be relevant to the defendant's state of mind, and to that extent, it should have been admitted. The fact that it was not admitted in this case is a harmless error. And that's not a statement, it's a question. Did I correctly understand your answer?
The state still contends that it would have been confusing to the jury to have that information. But if that as the alternative argument, the state would say that it was absolutely harmless error.
It would confuse the jury on the issue of justification to know what the defendant's state of mind might have been?
Well, no. If it came in, then the state would have been able to rebut that information and would have brought in more about the facts of that incident, in which case there would be sort of a mini trial about Veru's past conviction.
You would have wanted then the jury to hear more about the fact that your alleged victim had raped a handicapped woman 17 years ago, a defenseless invalid. That would have helped the state's case to explain that to the jury?
That's debatable.
Well,
if we have the...
Excuse me. I just wanted to follow up on Justice Howell's question. We need to know what issue is before us. I think we clearly understand that one issue is, if there was error, was it harmless? That is, you're arguing that even if there was an error in keeping that testimony out, it was harmless.
That's correct.
What we're not clear about is whether you agree that there was error in keeping out the testimony. That's the simple question.
Okay. And the answer to that would be that if the court was going to find that it was overly prejudicial, then neither the felony nor the name of it should have come in, but not just a felony conviction under 609 should come in. The name should come in with it.
Either it was error or it wasn't. Was it error?
Under 609, it was error to admit just the felony and not the name with it.
Can we then get to how it is that you're able to argue that it was harmless error? What is it about this case that would leave us in a position to say that that error could not have changed the result?
Because the argument comes down to justification as a result of, as the Chief Justice has pointed out, he was being attacked by someone who meant to kill him. And the justification is really to that, not to the sexual predator aspect. And he went too far. So that is the point, that you can only justify a certain level of response, regardless whether he believed he was a sexual predator or whether he was simply somebody trying to kill him, the response went too far. And in fact, arguably, the response should have been able to go further based on the lock in the sock, not the alleged sexual component.
Maybe I was taught criminal law too many years ago, and I've lost the whole concept of retaliation against someone who attacks you and how the force is supposed to be commensurate if you're entitled to defend yourself at all. Justice Holland asked you whether or not somebody fired a gun at you and missed you. What's the extent of what our society allows to be justified response? It seems to be that at least when I was in school, you could fire back. Now, what happens if you instead rush up to the person and beat them up because they just shot at you and admitted that when they shot at you, they tried to kill you? That's an unjustified use of force, defending yourself from someone who just tried to kill you?
If you can get away, you are supposed to try and get away, not attack them.
All right. Well, I suppose there is a difference between somebody shooting a high-powered rifle at you from a mile away and someone who's immediately in your presence who just shot at you and missed. And I sort of, in my own mind, analogized the lock and the sock and the swing and simply fortuitously failing to hit the guy in the back of the Kelly in the back of the head and killing him, but instead glancing and hitting him in the shoulder, which seems to be the consistent story here, or at least a harmonious story, if not entirely consistent. That's not a the reaction that Kelly retaliated to a certain extent of force here is as a matter of law not justifiable?
Well, the difference would be if someone was shooting at you, and if they still had the gun, they could still continue to shoot at you, and you would be justified in shooting them back before they did so. In this case, the testimony was certainly consistent that the lock and the sock was long gone. It had slid under something. Nobody even saw it. Vera was being pummeled, there was no danger that he could then...
Well, if nobody even saw it, how did you know it slid somewhere?
There was testimony to that effect.
Someone did see it?
Yes.
Away from the confrontation?
Yes. Yes. They did.
Is it your position that the use of the lock and the sock was deadly force or non-deadly?
I believe it's potentially lethal if you would hit someone with a lock, particularly in the back of the head, as the Chief Justice described. I certainly think it could have been, depending on...
Getting back to the harmless error matter, in the final part of this altercation, Viru is curled up in a ball.
Yeah.
And he's being pummeled, according to you. And that certainly would lead the jury to believe that the defendant had gone beyond merely protecting himself.
Yes.
On the other hand, if the defendant's position was that, this guy did the curling up and looking like a victim thing when he saw the guards or heard the guards coming or whatever, but this guy was still a threat to me, and you should find me not guilty because I was just reacting to a violent confrontation that he started. And in making that argument, wouldn't it be important for the jury to know that though this guy may seem pretty mild-mannered, he's a rapist?
The jury was aware that he had some serious felony conviction. He was in there a long time. I don't know that, given the size differential, that would have been that important in this case. No. I see my time.
Thank you. You have 4 seconds. I don't know if you want to use them all or you want to save some.
Your Honor, somewhere in the transcript, when we talk about the near death of Mr. Vera, I made reference to an MRI report, and I quote from it, and as I recall, the MRI report says there's no traumatic injury and it's degenerative disc disease.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement for assess.